You just had to shove the batteries in. Okay, thank you. Is this better? So we're talking about what is commonly called the ox herding pictures. Some people call them the bull herding pictures or the bull taming pictures. Has anybody seen these before or encountered this teaching before? So oxes and bulls have been around in Zen teaching for a long, long, long time, since at least late India, early Chan. There are a lot of koans and stories about oxes and bulls, partly because they were ubiquitous in rural China, and partly because everybody was familiar with their stubborn nature and their need for good direction. So they quickly became a metaphor, an image for various aspects of practice and our encounter with the self. Another thing that's been around for a long time are what are called circle teachings, which is like sets of drawings that all connect in a circle. The dependent chain of causation is a circle teaching, if you know that, the 12-fold chain of causation, because it begins and ends in the same place. So there arose a tradition of ox herding pictures taught as a circle teaching. And there's a lot of versions of these, from, you know, 5 pictures to like 90 pictures. There's a famous one a famous set that is talked about, but is long lost to history. And it sort of takes on this Ark of the Covenant power in people's minds that if only we hadn't lost this great set of pictures. But so it's a very old teaching. Jeez. I know, there's ghosts in the machine, right? It came to Japan, and it was taken on particularly by this one medieval monk in Japan who made the most famous set of pictures that we're used to seeing. And he and his assistant or student ended up promulgating these pictures, and the student wrote explanatory paragraphs and poems, and it went into the canon. It slid into the canon. There have been variations over time. Lots of people have said, I'm going to make my own set of the ox herding pictures, or I'm going to write my own set of poems. And it's a very interesting exercise to do. Coming to today, after all these centuries and centuries, this is still one of the primary texts used for novice monks in Zen monasteries. It's given to the baby monks when they come in. And they have to study it for a long time. So there's something about this teaching that just captured people's imagination. And for me, it's both very, very simple and easy to grasp, and very subtle and deep in its nuances. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Let's pass out the first set of pictures. I hope I have enough. There are 10 pictures. So this first one has picture 1, 2 on one side and 3, 4 on the other. What I want to do tonight is just go through the pictures, read you a couple of the poems, and sort of explain what you're looking at here, and then I'd love to have discussion and response to this teaching. So the big question, of course, is what is the ox? Is it the ego? Is it your desire? Is it something deeper? Generally, it's held that the ox is actually our true nature, our original self, our deep, true self, but out of our control. So notice if the metaphor starts to get away from you. That's the metaphor I'm going to stick with tonight, which is that the ox's fundamental nature. And oxes are, you know, they just are primal creatures. Yes? No, you know, the tradition, I don't think I've ever seen any in color. The tradition of black and white watercolor from China. And I think these are ink drawings. These are the ones from medieval Japan. So There are a lot of books, by the way. The one I'm going to work on mostly tonight is called Lectures on the 10 Ox Herding Pictures by Yamada Mumon, who is a 20th century teacher. I believe his teacher was either he was Uchiyama's teacher or the other way around, but very solid, very traditional Zen guy. So bear in mind that concept that this is the deep fundamental self that we're talking about, but it's not behaving, right? Or seems not to be behaving. So in the very first picture, searching for the ox, I'll read you the poem. I'm going to read you the paragraph. It's called a preface and then the poem. Till now, the ox has never been lost. Why then do you need to search for it? Turning away from your own awakening, you become estranged from it. Enclosed by dust, in the end, you lost it. The hills of home recede farther and farther away. You're lost as soon as the paths divide. There's several poems, and I don't want to read them all. So the Waka poem is, searching the deep hills, no sight of the ox, just the empty shrilling of the cicadas. So this guy, this young guy, he's so lost, he can't find anything of the ox, and he's so lost, there's no trail. You notice there's no path. There's no place to start. Please raise your hand and jump in and speak up if any of these poems resonate. At the beginning of our practice, we don't know what to do. We don't know where to go, where to begin, who to follow. You know, he could go left, he could go right. How does he begin to search? So it says, winning and losing consume you like flames. Right and wrong rise round you like blades. There's no right way to go. There's no, what are you supposed to do? So he's just lost. You guys are going to talk up today, aren't you? Speak, speak, speak. All right, we'll go further. Yes.
He said the ox's fundamental nature.
Yes, it's your true nature, your original self. So at the start of the search, you have no idea where it is. You don't even know where to look. Okay. Okay. Just yell. Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm looking at this and something I like also about this picture, just the visual, is that our root guy is hemmed in by stuff. He's hemmed in by there's so much stuff.
Right, that's a good point.
There's a lot of things going on.
There's so many places for the ox to hide. There's so many things to get lost in. And you reminded me of one other thing. He's going that way and looking this way. So he's not going to have a very easy time of it, right? He's going to just go in circles. Yeah.
My name is Jay.
Hi, Jay.
And observing what he does have. And that's the other landscape. Easy, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He might not know, and he has a desire to find. There's several things there that are important that he starts with,
right? So that's a really good point. He doesn't know where to begin, he doesn't know which way to go, but if he keeps looking, inevitably, eventually, he's going to find something, right? Part of our problem at the beginning of our path is that we are impatient. We don't want to wait. We want to know how long this is going to take. And in fact, people, we might ask that, how long will it be before I, feel at home here or have a settled practice or get enlightened? Well, you just have to keep looking. You just have to keep searching. So, yeah. Yeah.
I think I see the lasso, the gnome, has kind of a loop, and it looks like a lasso.
Well, what do you catch an ox with? It's a good thing he has a rope. Yeah. Now, the lasso over here that Fudo has is a very special lasso, because that is to lasso people who are being particularly recalcitrant about the path. So, yeah, he's like the ox over there. Yeah. Okay, and then we go to picture two. Just a few footprints over there in the distance, seeing the traces or seeing the footprints. With the aid of the sutras, you gain understanding. Through study of the teachings, you find traces. You see clearly the many vessels are all one metal, and the 10,000 things are all yourself. But if you do not distinguish correct from incorrect, how will you recognize true from false? Since you have yet to pass through that gate, only tentatively have you seen the traces. In the Waka, determination deep in the mountains, your efforts bear fruit, tracks. How gratifying to see a sign. Now, traps, there's traps everywhere, right? Through studying the sutras, you find a trace. Immediately, we think the truth must be in the sutras, right? The truth must be in the teacher. This must be where it is, right? It's in that book. It's in that cushion. It's in that teacher or that person. So we find a trace of something, and we immediately mistake the trace for the thing. Why are you laughing? Because you have done that, yes. Yes. Yeah, he does look kind of mad.
like not angry, it isn't something like anger, but like determined.
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
It
yeah, and it's just a footprint. Yeah. Back there?
Huh?
Oh, there's someone behind you.
Awakening. And then you can see it. That would actually create the little footprint, or the little footprint that's from somebody else that told you.
Right. All he's seen is a tiny trace of something, and immediately he's just totally focused on that.
But is that from his own experience in the empty, or do you feel that those steps are from somebody else that somebody else told you that there were steps?
Right. Yeah. One thing I didn't ask at the beginning is what made him start searching in the first place?
Yeah.
You know, we'll get to that, actually. These are circle pictures, remember? We're going to come back. But the part of the key here is, yes, there are traces. Remember, some of you have read Yuibutsu Yobutsu, one of Dogen's fascicles, and in it he says that birds follow the traces of birds in the sky, fish follow the traces of fish, we follow the steps of the ancestors. Only we can't see the traces of birds, and we can't see the traces of fish. That's their path. Our path is the traces of the ancestor. Yeah. So he's seen something, and he's really locked on to what it must mean. And he's going for it. Like you said, great determination. He's really focused now. But he thinks he's gotten closer than he has. Oh, I forgot something. Here is a book by John Cage called The Zen Ox Herding Pictures. How many John Cage fans are there in here? What? Yes, yes. Musician, painter, poet John Cage. He used the ox herding poems to make paintings, which are all very abstract. They're all like this. I'll pass this book around. And he wrote poems in response to his own paintings, which is very John Cage, if you know him. Searching for the ox, he writes, feelings, empty, being lost. And under finding the traces, which is another very abstract picture, more space to feel with my feet the faint marks. Remind me and I'll read his other poems. So, what happens when you chase the footprints down? Remember, he's still got a very strong idea about what he's going to find. We get to the third picture, which is seeing the ox. Now, one reason I'm using this book is I read several books about the ox herding pictures, and I picked this one up, and I was like, oh, it's Keoghan's handwriting all over the margins. Keoghan was my teacher, my root teacher, and my transmission teacher. And every once in a while, I pick up a book from the library, and it's got his marginalia in it. And I know his handwriting really well. And this is what he wrote about this picture. So take a good look at that picture. He says, one sees the nether end first. We see the rump, and it isn't pretty. The sources of the dung, no denial. The source of the dung. So we finally get a look at this ox that we're desperate to find, and it's just, you know, its rear end. Not what we expected, but having caught sight of it, we know where it is. We haven't caught it yet, but we have a sense of where it is. And in a way, it's not going to be able to escape if we keep our eye on it. Of course, we don't keep our eye on it, do we? We tend to go wandering off. So the poems are, in the trees, nightingales sing and sing again. Sun warms the soft wind. Green willows line the bank. There's nowhere left for it to hide. Its majestic head and horns no artist could draw. So the artist chooses not to draw it, which I think is interesting. And also in the preface, through sound you gain entry. By sight you face your source. The six senses are none different in each daily deed plainly there. Like salt in water or glue in paint. Raise your eyebrows, it is nothing other. Okay, what happens to salt and water? What happens to glue and paint? Dissolves, it becomes one thing, one new thing, right? So he's finally caught up with what he needs to find. But what happens next? Oh, wait, there's something. So this Yamada, he is a Rinzai guy. So some of what I'm going to read from him has a very Rinzai flavor. So I'll save that for a minute. The fourth picture. He's caught the ox, but look at that. Catching the ox. That's a little boy with a big ox. He somehow got the rope around his neck, but off they go. The preface is, today you've chanced upon it, so long hidden in the wilds, but you can't keep up with its high spirit. And it won't give up its love of sweet grass. Even more willful, as wild as ever, if you want to tame it, you must lay on the whip. And the second verse, with your last ounce of strength, you take it. But stubborn and strong, it won't be broken. Now it suddenly climbs to high ground, then it descends to vanish deep into mist. The waka is, listen, seniors, thinking only, ox, ox, don't let go. This is the real fetter. So Yamada says, just catching sight is not enough. You must get a tight rope on it, tame it, and make it your own. You can't say you don't know Miss Original Face. So just saying ox, ox, this is the real fetter. Every time we touch it, we idealize it, we create it, we construct a whole set of concepts around it. We think we know the path. It just instantaneously, a whole labyrinth of concepts rises up. If you touch a moment of samadhi in zazen, the very next time you come to that cushion, it's going to be a big obstacle right in your face. And it's going to be something you chase. It's going to get in your way. Does this sound familiar? So as soon as you catch it, you're in trouble. It's going to take you for a wild ride. And I really love that simple idea. It won't give up the love of sweet grass. Oxes will be oxes. They want to go to the meadow and eat the grass. So comments? Come on. Some of you have done this. Been taken for a ride? Yeah, it was years into my practice before I realized that just sitting meant just sitting. That it didn't mean sitting and trying to accomplish something, or sitting with particular goals in mind, or sitting in a particular state of mind or physical state. I just kept bringing more expectations, and they got subtler and subtler and subtler. If the room was just a different temperature, or I had a little more tea first, or there was something that I could blame. And then it was being Shuso that taught me that when the bell rings, you sit down. You just sit. And in a way, that's just letting the ox take you wherever the ox is going to go. What?
I said, all right, I'll take the bait.
Yeah.
We've had a request to use the mic for questions.
Then we will use the mic for questions. This is Kakumon. Hello. As said before, Mike, I will take the bait. So we follow the ox. We let the ox lead. There's still a what looks like a pretty stout string.
Right.
So what's our string? What's our soto string?
I will tell you what Yamada says. This is the Rinzai strain, but it's kind of it will translate. Without getting hung up on whether you can or cannot do it, go straight into the samadhi of mu, even if it is only for 1 second or for 1 minute. You may say, in order for me to get into just 5 minutes of samadhi, I have to sweat for 3 hours to clear all these interfering thoughts out. But suffering 3 hours for mere five minutes, that is all right. Those 5 minutes are 5 minutes of eternity. Those 5 minutes are 5 minutes of eternal Buddha. This is what is meant by 1 inch of sitting is 1 inch of Buddha. Then he quotes the poem, thinking only ox, ox, don't let go. Just this is the real fetter. He says, if you are holding the rope on the ox's snout, you are in for a great struggle. The bonds of desire and attachment, thinking and discrimination are not easily cut. The idea that you must not let go of the rope turns into a binding fetter, a source of suffering. But once you've seen the ox of fundamental wholeness, you're afflicted with torment. There's no way out, is there?
I'm so glad I converted to this religion.
That's why I came here.
Yeah, but right. Look, the company's great.
Well, what I love about this is he's really stuck at this point, right? If he lets go of the ox, he has to start all over again. The ox is going to get away. He's going to have to go search for it. If he hangs on to the ox, he's going to be towed all over the mountain. And he wants the ox. So what are you going to do? Yeah. Sweat 3 hours for a mere 5 minutes. So,
uh,
You passing the mic out? Okay.
I have the mic. Oh, hi, I'm Bridget. I love it that the ox just wants to go to the sweet grass. That is something so simple, so primordial. And then the fierceness of the little guy trying to, like, you know, just, you have so much that you just want to hold on so tight, and just like how that desire is so strong in us, and that all that the bull wants to do is just go and graze in sweet grass. I just think it's so sweet.
Right. I love it. Kenga?
I'm Ken Gunn. I'm going to be an optimist and say that I like this picture because it's the first time that a clear and unequivocal connection was established between them. And getting what you want is always a real interesting practice.
Right. It's always affliction and torment to some extent. That is, it's just that finally you see what it is, but you can't quite hold it. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sage. I think if I were engaging with these pictures without commentary, and I didn't know that there was more pictures coming, I would see this as accomplishing the goal. Like, this is what I wanted when I'm trying to chase down the ox. I want to get my lasso around the ox, and I want to, like, be ripped around by it and go wherever it takes me.
This is going to get old fast.
Yeah, but it, like cowboys ride on, you know, like a rodeo and stuff, like, it's thrilling.
Okay. We'll see how long Sage wants to stay on the Mustang.
Okay. Here I am.
Let's see what picture five gives us here. And you're welcome to keep these if you want.
I think there's enough for everybody, right?
Put that down. So, does everybody have the fifth picture, which is taming the ox? Remember, where there are 10 pictures, this is only the fifth one, so things evolve. Once one little thought arises, another follows. Adhere to awakening and all becomes truth. Reside in ignorance and all is unreal. This happens not because of the world, but only because of your mind. Keep a firm grip on that rope and do not waver. Not for a moment put down whip or rein, lest the ox wander back to dust and desire. Pull again and again till it's tame and gentle. And Yamada says, well now, you have finally caught the ox, but this ox will not do what you want it to do. That's why you have to train it and make it your own. So he's made progress. He's got hold of this ox. He's got the rope through the nose ring so that the ox will have to turn its head wherever he wants it to go. It will face the direction he points it, for better or worse. But he's not letting go. One of the interesting things about this teaching is that it is often said that this is where the picture should stop, that everything else is extra. That forever and ever and ever we are taming the ox. Yeah. Oh, I guess we have to wait for the mic.
Just from this pose, it's kind of got an arrogant, Hello?
No, it's just the masks. Just speak up.
Okay. So, yeah, he's... Oh, there it is. Okay. He's kind of got this arrogant tilt to the head there, little pose. And it's been my experience. Whenever that feeling overtakes you, the following...
That you're in control.
That, yeah, whenever there's that arrogant moment where it's like, oh, yeah, I got it. I got it now.
Yeah.
Everything's going to go great. Nothing can go wrong.
Right. Right. That's the reason that, well, there's a couple of reasons why they say that, why some people say this is the end of the pictures, because there's always more work to do. Because it's always going on beyond, because we don't arrive somewhere and we can just stop following the precepts and watching our mind and all of that. But also because practice is enlightenment. This is Dogen's primary koan and primary understanding, is that to take your seat when the bell rings, to bow without resistance, to set your shoes straight, to go to work on time and, you know, and meet each person with attention is an expression of true enlightenment. It's an expression of truly understanding interpenetration and the nature of the world. So what else is there to do but this? There's that. That is part of the philosophy. Reiju. Just have to run around.
This is Reiju. Just one question that's not so much about these, but do these predate Dogen?
These particular pictures are pretty contemporaneous with Dogen, but the Oxford, these are a version of a much older teaching.
I see.
There's every reason to assume that Dogen had encountered these.
Yeah.
As far as I could tell, he did never directly address them. At least it's not in Kim, and it's not in any of the sources I could find.
Thank you. I'm wondering about the rope here. Like, it's being used differently, and there's, like, a lot of extra, and it's loose in some places, and it doesn't look like the bull is tugging.
Yeah, the ox is becoming docile.
Yeah. I wonder if this could happen without the rope, or if the rope, like, I'm wondering about the role of the rope.
What is the rope?
Yeah.
What do you think the rope is?
Well, to me, it seems like something about interpenetration and connectedness. Yeah.
What is it about you, for instance, in pursuit of your nature that holds you to it?
Practice.
Yeah. Well, and the Bodhi mind, the desire for enlightenment. We say, you know, that the day of the arising of the wish for enlightenment is the day of fulfillment. Again, practice is enlightenment. Enlightenment is the fulfillment of practice. That just holding on to the rope and being determined to pursue the taming of the ox allows the taming of the ox. It gives that message. I'm here. I'm sticking with this. Every time he lets go, he starts over. Not exactly over. I mean, I've let go of the rope so many times and found it again. Right? You learn something every time. But there is something that keeps us on that path. It keeps us going. I forgot the John Cage poems. Sorry. So for seeing the ox, he says, it was a juncture to go that way or this. In other words, he just accidentally came upon the ox. And for catching the ox, nice little black abstraction here, two members of each other. And for this poem, Taming the Ox, the dance, the magic, in some way, the contours. The dance, the magic.
Yeah.
Are there any poems?
I'm wondering, are there any poems or commentaries for the transitions between pictures or what's between?
I mean, why did somebody give me guidance here?
Because a whole lot happened between 4 and 5.
I know. And you know? I can't tell you how many times I wish somebody would tell me how to do that. I'm laughing because I've wanted the same thing. Precepts? Can't I have some commandments, for heaven's sakes? Can't someone just give me a map and a set of instructions? But no, it's going to be the way it is for you. It will not be the way it is for me.
And I don't know oxes very well, but I do know some things about dogs, for instance. And I've chased a lot of dogs to try to catch them, and they just run away faster than I can get them. And it's usually when you turn around and stop and act like, okay, I don't really want you, that you end up being able to pet them.
Mm-hmm. Does that resonate with anybody? One of Kyogen's favorite sayings was that samadhi was like trying to get a cat to sit in your lap. You better just sit around and pretend you didn't care. Yeah. I don't know what happened between 4 and 5 for him, but I do know what happened for me. And we just have to find our own way. You know, I got bruised, I got knocked around, I got disgusted, I gave up. I got tired. Got really tired. And, you know, eventually I stopped trying to chase the ox long enough that the ox came and ate grass beside me, and we made friends. Yeah. There is a sense of having to get really tired of this struggle and relax a little, like you're saying, with the dog. So, all right. Considering the rest is extra. Picture 6, riding home on the ox. That's a flute he has, by the way. He's sitting on the ox. He's not holding the reins. And he's just playing his flute. Shields and spears are gone. Winning and losing are nothing again. You sing woodsmen's village songs and play children's country tunes. Stretched out on back of your ox, you gaze at the sky. We call you, but you won't turn around. Catch at you, but you won't be tied down. Riding high on your ox, leisurely you head for home. In each beat and verse, your boundless feeling. Ah, that's so sweet. So shields and spears are gone. The struggle, to some extent, the struggle is over.
Lindsay has a question.
Yeah.
It looks to me like Manjushri.
Yeah. Manjushri is sitting on a lion, but that's the lion, I was taught that's the lion of the smaller self, the ego, the personality, the powerful self, but to some extent also the true self that is now functioning for Manjushri's sake. He keeps his eyes open on the back of the lion. Part of this picture is that the ox knows the way home. So once making friends with it, he no longer has to point the ox. The ox already knows. It's a matter of trust. You know, when we talk about faith in Buddhism, people often ask what Buddhist faith is. And for a long time, Buddhist faith is investigating whether this works. It's Cook calls it investigating the rumor. You see people with something you would like to have, with a kind of composure or equanimity or peace that you want. And you investigate whether what they're doing will work for you. You're literally testing the method. And you have to test the method wholeheartedly, weigh in, everything in the pot gets thrown in to see if it'll work. When that, if it does prove to work for you or to somehow keep calling you back, then faith becomes a kind of trust. I can't see what's next. It's dark. I don't know where to go, but I have the faith that there is a way out. There's a way through. And I trust those with me, and I trust this ox to lead me home. But we've all had times when we had no idea where home was. We didn't know where to go. And he's just not even looking. This is something that when I first started to practice, this is what I wanted. Boy, this was what I wanted. I wanted to have that faith, that safety, that fearlessness, and that trust in something bigger than myself. I see some nodding heads. Never mind? Okay. You want to look at picture 7? Does anybody know what time it is? Oh my gosh. Okay. So picture 7, the ox forgotten, the self remains. How many people are familiar with the five ranks or the five stages? Some of this should resonate in there. There have been commentators who've directly connected various pictures to various ranks, but it gets a little heady. The ox forgotten, the self remains. Astride your ox, you reach the hills of home. With ox put away, you too are at ease. The sun is high, yet still you're dreaming. Your whip and line hang idle under the thatched eaves. Okay. So the ox, it's said in most commentaries that the ox has gone to sleep. The ox is in its pen, asleep. And what I love about this picture is it's not just that he's at ease, he's totally at ease, but he doesn't have any place to go. He's stopped chasing things. There's no more rushing after the ox, no more. Now, traps and traps and traps, right? If you touch this moment, you might think you're done with your practice. You might think you don't have to get up the next morning and sit or follow precepts or anything else. And I've seen people make that mistake a lot of times. Oh, I get it now. I can go back out in the world and not follow any discipline. And immediately, you get in trouble. So it is a very, very advanced person who can drop all of the discipline and not go awry. So there's a trap here. He's kind of snoozing. All right. All of a sudden, you got real quiet.
I have a question.
Yeah.
My name is Nancy.
I'm not going to argue about everything you just said, but we do take breaks. We do rest. We do chill out a little bit. Except for some people, I'm not going to name names, but who are just grinding all the time in their practice, and I've observed that. But I don't think, except maybe for Dogen, is there any place in what we're learning and reading that says you can't ever stop, you can't ever chill out, you can't ever just be in your village when the sun is out. And the ox is even resting. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, sure. Don't mistake practice for work. Don't mistake rest for negligence. Of course there's rest, and there's great rest in the discipline when you stop reaching and grabbing and chasing things. When it's just sitting, it's very restful. When it's sitting to get something, it's hard. It hurts. It physically hurts. And it's hard, and it's hard to make yourself do it. When it's just, oh, you just have to sit down for half an hour, that's very restful. And so is being kind to a person rather than being sharp. And so is putting your shoes straight rather than making a mess. It's actually easier. So we make the mistake of hearing, don't drop the whip, and thinking that means stay tense. It's not that at all. There's a great ease and a great relaxation in coming to being at home in the practice. Does that make sense? I see some nodding heads. What I love about this picture, besides the trap, is that he really is at home. And I am at home here, and I am at home in this practice, and I can tell you there is such a sense of rest there.
I wanted to say, I love the way you teach this class, Chico, and that's why I'm here. And there are many, many books with many illustrations. But this one strikes me all the time of the kid. It feels like a childlike spirit. And then that makes me think about Zen mind, beginner's mind, what Suzuki Roshi was talking about, right. If you want to say anything about that.
No, I don't want to say anything about that. Well, let's go on. I mean, time is going by, so let's see what John Cage has to say about picture 6 and 7. So for riding the ox home, he says, let it dance between mind moving and not moving. And for this picture, multiplicity ran, no play of power, dancing free. Okay. Whatever, John. I'll tell you something about John Cage later. I actually have a personal relationship with this. Okay, picture 8. Now, some people say that picture 7 is the last picture. that everything else is extra, and others. There were sets of ox herding pictures that stopped here with the empty circle. I found one commentator who said, the circle is extra. Of course. So we come to the circle. Come on. Forget both self and ox. Where is it? Shedding worldly feelings, erasing holy thoughts, you do not linger where the Buddha is, you dash right past where the Buddha is not. Don't cling to duality, or the thousand-eyed one soon will find you. If birds were to bring you flowers, what a disgraceful scene. Okay, here's a really good poem. Whip and line and you and the ox, all gone to emptiness, into a blue sky for words too vast. Can a snowflake survive the fire of a flame pit? Attain this, truly be one with the masters of the past. To me, the thing that really jumps out there is erasing holy thoughts, dropping all sense of gain and goal and effort. So the big question is, how do you continue to get up and go sit when the bell rings with no thought of gain, no goal, nothing pulling you forward? How do we do that? We do it all the time, you know. We live naturally all the time. We just don't notice that we're living naturally, because that's the point of living naturally. There's no witness to it, right? We just get up and go to the kitchen and get a glass of water and drink it, and we don't have commentary about it, and we don't have a set of goals about it, and we don't have judgment about whether we did it well or not, and whether we did it like somebody else, and We add so much to our practice constantly instead of just doing it. Does that make some sense? So everything is forgotten here. It doesn't mean you're not doing anything. It doesn't mean passivity. It doesn't mean withdrawal from the world. It just means dropping all the effort and the holy thoughts go away. Those holy thoughts are the thoughts that say this is good and that's bad. Holy only exists if there is unholy, sacred and profane. Zen is very much about the mundane. It's about what's in front of you. It's about how everything is sacred, therefore nothing is more sacred. So we drop that sense of holiness. Now, holiness is very useful. It's a very good mirror. That's why we have places like where you're not supposed to go stand there. But every once in a while, we make everybody walk over it to remember that it's just a projection. The idea of sacred and profane is just a projection. Here we drop it all in this moment. You guys have gotten so quiet. Okay, let's find out what happens next. Picture 9. Yes. Everybody wants to know what happens next.
All right, this is Kyra. So I had kind of this thought, like, forget both self and ox. And it kind of made me think of, like, when you first see these, like, what comes before picture one? Like, he doesn't even know that there's this ox he's supposed to be looking for.
We're going to get there.
Okay. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, picture 9. There isn't anybody in that picture. But there are things in that picture. It's not empty anymore. You returned to the origin, went back to the source. Such wasted effort. How much better to just be blind and deaf? From inside your hut, you don't see outside your hut. Yeah. These poems are weird. Yamada says, in order to return to the origin, go back to the source, you had to exert yourself to the utmost. You left home to search for the ox. You spotted its tracks, caught a glimpse of it, and finally caught it. After finally taming and training it, you rode it back home. But then you completely forgot about the ox, forgot the self, and ended up right back where you started. On reflection, it looks as though you went to a lot of unnecessary trouble. All that work for nothing. This here now, just as it is, if this is your goal, you did not have to put yourself through such trials. If this is your goal, you do not need to enter a table, a temple, and eat monastery gruel. So, as Kyra was saying, you know, we are coming back to the beginning. That was a lot of trouble and a lot of struggle and a lot of suffering to get where? To get to the point where you just get up in the morning and put your clothes on and brush your teeth and eat your oatmeal. And yet, it's very different. It's totally different, even though it is the same. Again, this those of you familiar with the five ranks or the five stages, this really rolls back. The fifth rank looks from the outside, just like the first rank, but is experienced completely differently. John Cage says, nothing's changed, yet something immense that adds up to zero. And he actually has an image in this picture, a zero. Yeah. Anybody have a comment on this? It's that first poem. It's some part of the poems that I'm reading. There are three poems. Yamada does not tell us which poem was written by which poet, which is really annoying, but I think that's what the commentary is. Because I recognize some of the kanji, but not all of them. So the world is here, but when there is no self in it, we're just in the world. It's just the world. We are there breathing, drinking water, going to work, taking care of the children, sitting when the bell rings, without putting the self forward and making the self center. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
One more kakuan. Yeah, there's no little guy. We don't have a little guy. And we don't have a no little guy in a real impressive way. And there's stuff
In an impressive what?
In an impressive, like picture eight, like I tripped for years about picture eight and was like, I want me some of that picture eight. Like, I'm going to get weird about that. And you know, like, just have some stuff and it's not, you know what I mean? Like, you could be less weird about the stuff. And this is just some nice stuff. And it's not enclosing something else. And it's not like, I don't know. I'm just, it's enjoyable seeing this time around.
But also remember that this Yamada who just said, what a lot of extra unnecessary trouble you went to, is the same guy that said, 3 hours of sweating for 5 minutes of moo is what you should, you know, it's like, those two things are actually the same, the same teaching. Yeah.
I'm Thomas. Is there any particular significance with the flower or the image in there, or is it just a nice image?
Not that I know of. It's okay. It's a traditional image of, you know, flowers always represent evanescence and change to some extent. You know something I learned yesterday? Cherry blossoms fall so quickly because they are the only flower that falls at perfect ripeness. I did not know that. I was told this by a good source. I hope it's true. But so, it's always such a heartbreak when these perfect cherry blossoms just suddenly disappear. I mean, this week has been cherry blossom week, right? And then they will just be gone. And we'll move on to the next thing. But anyway, little aside there. Ken Gunn?
Maybe you can help me remember. There's that English poet who wrote something about ceasing wandering and returning to where we came from and knowing that place for the first time.
T.S. Eliot.
That's what this reminds me of.
I can't remember the exact reference, but that's
Eliot. I can't remember the exact words either.
Right. I think we're on time to start coming to the end here. Oh my gosh. Yes, we have to get to picture 10. Somebody tell me what they notice about picture 10. There's something special in there. Well, I will talk about Hotei, but notice that our little guy is there. He's starting out on his little path. Or is he at the end of his path? Or is which one is which, you know? This is what makes it a circle picture. Hotei, the concept of entering the marketplace with bliss bestowing hands is a very old phrase from Zen. And it's here it's extended hands, but it's usually bliss bestowing hands. And Hotei is the emblem of that. It is also fourth and fifth rank in the five ranks. It's returning to the world of phenomena, having touched the world of the absolute, and bringing the knowledge, the experience of that back into daily function with whole heart. And that's why fifth rank looks like first rank. There's nothing special. How many of you heard Kyogen's talk on Sunday? He mentions this idea of not looking special. not pointing at the self, not in any way needing to be recognized by rank or title or anything. You just return to the marketplace. And bliss-bestowing hands are the hands that give people what they need. So Hote always has a big old pot belly. He's always kind of old. And he has this huge bag, which is filled with toys and candy and whatever people need. And he gives it away. It's a, you see a kind of commercialized little fat jolly Buddha image that's kind of common in Chinese culture, but Hote is a very old, very solemn figure, considered wisest of the wise, because he doesn't have anything to prove to anybody, including himself. He's just doing what needs to be done.
Is the little character in the first picture the little character in the 10th picture, or is he Hote?
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I thought he could be either.
Yeah. I think it's the same character. I think we're all both of these characters, you know. We all experience this. So we've all been lucky enough to meet Hote at some point in our life. There has been some point where you were lost in the marketplace and hungry, and somebody gave you what you needed. And you've done that for somebody else at some point in your life. We all get to have these moments.
I have something in my head which, I don't know, seems perfect but doesn't make much sense for this picture. It's, you know, there's the saying of the person running in one direction and he meets the other person going the other way, and one says, yeah, I'm trying to get away from everything, and the other person says, yeah, me too. And that seems like, you know, the world of dukkha, like the quintessential. This is two people doing the opposite of that. It's like, I can't say more than that. Yeah. But I have that image in my head that it's the two people who are meeting doing the opposite.
Right. So Cage says, liberation, the flower, the smile, the return bearing gifts to the village, which is pretty straightforward. I like this one better. With bare chest and feet, you come to the market. Under dirt and ash, your face breaks into a laugh. With no display of magic powers, you make withered trees burst into flower. So we're just coming to the end of class, so time for a couple of comments. Yeah.
Your exchange with Reju, I'm Thomas, made me kind of take notice of the fact that both the boy character and Hote are both carrying sacks. The boy has a small one and Hote has a large one. And so I don't know, that just seems significant.
The boy looks very much like the pilgrim to me. The one who's just setting out with only what he can carry. You know, that's that determination of the first picture, which is, I'm going to find that ox. And then we come to the first picture, he's like, I don't know how to find the ox. Where do I go to find the ox? That's how we come to practice often, is I'm going to go get what I need. And then we're lost for a while. So, yeah. Any last comments?